Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a very, very accomplished entrepreneur, a fellow IPO from Columbus, Ohio, USA, Mr. Larry English. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Larry is the president at Centric Consulting, which is a technology and business consulting firm employing over 1,000 people. And for a lot of our Indian viewers, they also have a major presence in India. He's an author, and all of you know that I'm very partial towards authors. So he's an author of a book titled Office Optional, How to Build a Connected Culture with Virtual Teams. And as I mentioned, he's a fellow member of the IPO. So Larry, let's talk Centric Consulting. Tell me about this venture and what motivated you to start this.
Sure. So as you mentioned, we're a management and technology consulting company, and we've grown to now we're over 1,200 people in 14 US cities and India. Wow. And we have been remote that entire time. So we've been around for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And that leads to why we started it. Mm-hmm. We were a little disillusioned with we had worked for multiple kinds of consulting companies, and we liked some things, but there were things that we definitely didn't like. Mm-hmm. And so we said, why can't we build a company where we just keep all the things that we love about consulting and get rid of all the stuff that we don't like?
Right.
And that's where we came from. And so we sat down on a sheet of paper and we said, if we could build the ideal consulting company, what would it look like? What would the value system be? And so one of those things was we wanted better work-life balance. Consulting can be very high pressure, a lot of work, a lot of travel. Mm-hmm. And we said, is there a way we can do this so there's better work-life balance for all of our employees? And that's where one of the ideas came from, which was to be remote. Mm-hmm. And so we were blazing that trail 20 years ago, trying to figure out how to be remote. And once we figured it out, we knew the secret for a long time that it was a better way to work, but nobody believed us. Mm-hmm. And that was why I ended up writing the book, because everybody looked like I was a crazy person, where I said, you can have a remote company, have a great culture, and everybody's happy and it works.
Amazing. Amazing. So, you know, I'm going to come to your book, but when I saw the title, I was going to ask you, did you write this before the pandemic or after the pandemic? But you answered.
Yeah, I wrote it. So, so the funny story. So we could start to see that remote work was going to be accepted. Mm. The technology was getting better and clients were becoming a little bit more accepting of it. Mm-hmm. And so we thought this was the future of work, like 15 or 20 years out. And I kept having to explain it so much. I'm like, you know what? There's nothing out there that explains. There's some books that explain how to be remote, but there are none that explain how to be remote and how to have a great culture. Wow. And so I said, let's write it. And so I went to some of my partners, my main partner, and I was like, hey, I'm going to write this book. And he's like, dumbest idea I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. Do not do it, whatever you do. And so I didn't listen to him. And I was getting ready to publish it right when the pandemic happened. So completely accidental.
Amazing. Amazing. So I'm going to come back to your book because I have some questions for you on remote working. But as you scaled up, and you said you're about 20 years in business, as you scaled up, and one of the biggest challenges of every business is scaling up, what were some of your challenges and learnings?
So the biggest one that I would talk about, especially as it relates to being virtual, is we had this great culture where we loved everybody. We were a smaller organization then. And we were very worried that if we scaled the organization, we were going to screw up the culture. And so we actually went around and we looked at companies that had successfully grown their business and maintained their culture. And then you had to add on, okay, do that while everybody's virtual. And so we had to figure out how to do that and what the keys were to success, to successfully maintain your culture. And the number one thing to doing that was hiring leaders that match your value system. Okay. And match your culture. And so if you can do that, you can scale a virtual organization to any size. And so once we figured that out, then there's a lot of things that we do around. We're very careful about the leaders that we hire or we promote to make sure that they match our value system. And we train all of our employees on our virtual culture. We bring them together to train them. Well, during the pandemic, we don't. It's all online, but we train everybody on our culture. And so there are a number of things that we figured out like that helped us scale and maintain and have a great culture.
Amazing. So before I go further into technology, you've spoken about culture and how you've built this culture. Help me understand from my viewers and listeners, how do you define culture and what are you doing to be able to keep such a strong culture in your organization?
The simplest definition of culture is how things get done around here. Mm-hmm. If you dig deeper, it's so many things. It is your value system. It is the spoken and unspoken things of how employees are rewarded. It's how mm-hmm. you treat each other. It can mm-hmm. be physical or visual cues as well. So you add all of that up, that's all culture. And there's a lot to that. Mm-hmm. And what we've learned is you have to treat your culture the same way you treat your business strategy, with the same care. So it is active and you manage it and you have to think about it. And so when you do that, if you plan it out, it permeates everything that you do. Mm-hmm. And so you're asking how we do that. That's what I did in the book, is because mm-hmm. there's so much to it. So everything from measurement to hiring, mm-hmm. as an example, we figured out, here's the things that for our culture, people have to have, no matter what. We can't teach them these attributes. They need to have these coming in. And so we screen for those when we hire. These other ones, we know we can train people on and they can grow into our culture, but these they have to have. And so we did all of those things. It's kind of a step-by-step in the book of how to do that.
Okay. And let me stay with one more question on culture. And I'm often asked this question by startup founders. They say large companies build culture over a period of time through best practices. I'd love to understand from you, how does a startup founder build culture?
So in our original business plan, we talked about all of the things that we wanted to get rid of. Mm-hmm. And so we started doing those things. Mm-hmm. We didn't think about culture. Mm-hmm. We were just trying to stay in business and like, hey, does this premise of these things, if you build a company that has these value systems and operates this way, does this resonate in the marketplace, both in clients and employees? And we found that it did. Mm-hmm. And then I would say 2 or 3 years in, we actually figured out the value of culture, how powerful it is. Mm-hmm. It, you know, there's the quote that a great culture eats strategy for lunch.
Correct.
And we figured that out. We're like, oh, this is amazing. We're happy. Our clients like it. Let's actually codify it. Let's write it down. Let's figure out how to manage it. And so it took us, we did not set out, kind of to your point as a startup, thinking specifically about culture, but we learned the value of it along the way.
Amazing. Amazing. So Larry, Centric Consulting focuses a lot on technology. So let me ask you a few questions about technology. And you're a firm that is there in the US and in India. But my question to you is, a digital world cuts across boundaries. But in the last few years, the boundary walls seem to be coming up in the world all over again. I'd love to get your perspective on how will this digital world function?
Sure. So I'm not worried about those boundaries coming up. What has been fascinating to me is, all of a sudden, organizations have this mindset that you physically had to be in the office and you only hired people within a 30-mile radius of your headquarters. Mm-hmm. And all of the startups that are disrupting the world, they hire people from anywhere in the world, the best people, the best talent in the world. Everything's in the cloud. Mm-hmm. They don't have office space. And so they're moving much faster. And so all of these corporations that were kind of dragging their feet, mm-hmm. we worked with a number of them. They're like, nah, you got to come back in the office. They're losing their best people. Mm-hmm. And so we predicted that they would have to change their policies. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. So this massive momentum is happening now and it's not going back. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's incredibly exciting because all of a sudden you're going to have virtual organizations that hire from all over the world for the best talent. And the other thing that about the pandemic that was interesting is it caused every organization to become digital. Mm-hmm. So customers wanted to interact through a digital channel. Employees wanted to work remote or hybrid, and you had to digitize your entire company. Well, that is leading to massive disruption in almost every industry and massive change. And so when you become digital, there are no boundaries. And when you can hire people from anywhere, there are no boundaries. So I think it has the potential to improve the world. Think about all these areas in the world that have not been able to participate, and now they're going to be able to. So I'm excited to see what happens. I think it's going to be great for the world.
Fascinating. And now from the perspective of an average human being in the world who doesn't understand technology so much, I'd love to get your perspective on how will things like artificial intelligence, machine learning, robotics, and now the metaverse, how is these things going to change lives for the average human being?
Yeah, and what's interesting is, so technology is moving, improving exponentially, and we think linearly as a species, as a human being. And so it's very hard for us to understand, how profound and fast things are moving, because the leaps at the end are huge. So I was listening to a podcast yesterday with a physicist. They can now read memories. So they can read memories of chimpanzees and extract them from their brains. And he was talking about how we'll now be able to, instead of passing, electrons over the internet, we can pass neurons or feelings. So it's going to be mind-blowing what is going to happen and transform. There's a book I'm reading right now called AI 2041. It's a great book. If you want to understand in layman's terms, they write it in short story format. So people can easily understand how their lives will look different or change, to answer your original question. So I like everything that's happening with technology. There's going to be massive disruption, some of it good and some of it bad. And we're going to have to work through all of those things. I mean, I do think that it will continue to put some people out of work, but create new opportunities. And we have a responsibility to train people and to put all the things in place to help bridge that digital divide.
Very well said. So I want to ask you another question on the metaverse, which is suddenly becoming so, so popular. People are talking of virtual meetings in three dimension, feeling, smell, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Where does it take where does it leave the human element of interaction?
Sure. So a couple of things. I've been studying Web 3.0. In fact, I have an article coming out in Forbes about distributed autonomous organizations, because I think those could be very disruptive to the world in a very good way. And I think Web 3.0 is probably going to be more disruptive than certainly Web 1 was or Web 2 is in terms of the world and the opportunity around how we interact with each other. Now, that said, and I write about this in the book, is in this digital world, there are dangers to it. And you can't leave out or forget the human connection, the connection to nature. All of those things are still hugely important, and we have to preserve them. And so I'll give you an example. Technology now allows you to be connected 24/7. That is not healthy for anybody. And so what we encourage people to do, and what I do, is I have all of the notifications turned off on my phone from all these apps. So when I end my workday at 5 or 6 p.m., I'm not talking to anybody about work, or I'm not thinking about work until the next morning, because, and I get outside and I do, we need to do those things and have the discipline around those. And a corporation or a manager, you need to support your employees doing that. Don't expect them to answer your emails at midnight, because it's not healthy for them.
Correct. That's it. So before I move to your book, I've got one more question. As someone who is writing for Forbes, someone who's written a book, someone who consults so extensively in technology, what would your predictions be, or your top two or three predictions be for the digital economy in the next few years?
Sure. So if the window is, 2 to 3 years, remote wins. I think it's already won. It's not even a question. So remote hybrid work. I think what's interesting is, because now we're using all this technology within the corporations and how we interact, you're creating this massive amount of data that is a digital MRI or a digital X-ray of how your organization works. Mm-hmm. And then the folks that have studied that, I actually work with a professor in Singapore. Mm-hmm. The natural evolution then is companies become more flat. Mm-hmm. And they become smaller and they become more nimble. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're going to see that happen with organizations. Mm-hmm. I think leaders are going to have to learn to lead differently. The old way of leading where everybody was in the office no longer works. It's a different skill set, different tactics that you have to use. And then we talked about Web 3.0. I do think that will be hugely disruptive as well.
Okay. So now let's move to your book. Your book is titled Office Optional, How to Build a Connected Culture with Virtual Teams. Before we get into your book, is this available on Amazon and other platforms?
Correct.
Okay, so it's available and a lot of our viewers and listeners, I would encourage you to go and have a look at the book and then take your own calls. So you did mention a little bit about the book, but I'd love to understand from you what led you to write this book?
And I will say one other thing. So you certainly can get it on Amazon, and then LarryEnglish.net mm-hmm. Is where kind of the collection of all the podcast videos, all the articles that I write. And so that's an easy place for people to go.
Okay. LarryEnglish.net. Got it. Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. No. And then what did you want me to go into?
So I wanted to know, what made you write the book? What were your hypotheses when you started?
As we discussed before, there was nothing written out there, and we'd been operating this way. And YPO, I would tell so many people in YPO, and their eyes would just like, you're a crazy person. There's no way you can run a company this way. Mm. And I was like, no, really you can. And so I saw the need that I thought more companies were going to have to do this. I didn't know about the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so I said, let's develop. There's a way to, if you sit down and think about it, there is a way for people to methodically do this and build a virtual organization and have a great culture. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to do that. I wanted to put that out into the world.
Okay. And continuing from your thought about the pandemic, how will the workplace change? I mean, you've been doing it for some time, but a lot of other people have now had no choice but to accept remote working or working from home. Do you see this as a trend continuing, or do you see people coming back to work like they used to?
No, the train has left the station. We are not going back. And mm-hmm. I will tell you why. So during the pandemic, we were working with a number of early adopters, and we mm-hmm. worked with a number of clients, and they were all pulling their mm-hmm. employees. And it was consistently around 5% or less of their employees that wanted to come back into the office mm-hmm. full time. And so we knew that people loved it and they didn't really want to. The C-suite, they've had all their success in the office. And mm-hmm. they're like, no, everybody needs to come back. And so we knew that if enough companies started to offer remote work, mm-hmm. people were going to have choices and they were going to absolutely choose to work for the company that offered remote work. And that's exactly what has happened. And the domino is way past. It's, we've gone over the cliff. So we are not going back, especially with, Omicron, and it's been, how long has it been? 2.5, 3 years since this has been going on.
Yeah, we've been
2 years. Yeah, it feels like a lot longer to me.
I know.
So we are absolutely not going back. No, we've worked with a lot of clients through this adoption curve. Mm. This is kind of the second part of your question, and it's a big transformation. There's probably 5 or 6 major areas if you want to do hybrid well or remote well. That you have to think through, from technology to what's your policy around real estate. Are you going to reconfigure, get smaller, smaller footprint, more real estate? What are your policies going to be? So there's a huge, it's a transformation of the entire organization, and that's hard. Mm-hmm. And it is a lot of work for organizations to get through it, and we have to have a little bit of patience, but I'm optimistic that everybody will get through that.
Amazing. A question again that is often asked, and I've been speaking to several HR leaders around the world. Given the work from home is becoming acceptable, and you've been doing it for 20 years, how do leaders seek accountability from people who are not working from an environment where you can see and watch them?
Yeah, and that's the first chapter in the book is, trust your employees is the number one thing. If you want to have a great culture, you can, there's a lot of companies that are putting in all this monitoring software that monitors every 15 seconds. It takes a screenshot.
Right.
I beg companies, please, please do not do that. We've worked with thousands and thousands of people remotely, and I can count on one hand how many times somebody intentionally has not worked. Most people, the problem is actually the opposite. People work too much. And so you also have to, you can no longer measure productivity by how long somebody's sitting in their seat from 8 to 5. It is, what are they actually getting done? And so a lot of people think, and what we're seeing is productivity actually increases. You have to change your measures of productivity from the past, but it is a better way of doing things. And people think it's a better thing because the person's not getting promoted because they showed up to work from 8 to 5, but actually for what they're accomplishing.
Very interesting. So Larry, I'm going to move to the next segment. You know, my guests and my viewers and my listeners love to get to know my guest a little more. So I've got two or three questions for you, what I call personal questions. My first question is that for someone who's been achieving so many amazing things, as you look back at life, what would you say are three key milestones or pivot points in your life or your career?
So the first one is meeting and marrying my wife of almost 30 years.
Okay.
You know, the success that we're talking about is a partnership, and I wouldn't be where I am today without my wife, and it makes my life full and rich. And I'm very fortunate that we met at a very young age. The second would be I was working for a big international consulting company out of college and, working 100 hours a week. Wow. And so I had this midlife crisis. I was like, is this all there is to life? This is awful. And so my wife and I, we had just been married. We packed a backpack and we traveled around the world for a year. And I was really trying to find myself and figure out what I wanted my life to be. And so that was transformational for me figuring that out and taking that trip. And then the last one, in an odd way, the pandemic has been transformational for me and my organization because we were, I was accidentally, as we talked about publishing this book when the pandemic happened, we'd been designing our organization to deliver all of our services virtually. And we do all the things that the world needs to better participate in the digital economy. So we've had our best 2 years ever as an organization, and it just accelerated what we thought the future was going to be. It pushed it closer and it was a very good thing for us. So it's been a great thing for us in an odd way. I know there's an incredible amount of pain and suffering, but it has been oddly transformational for me.
Incredible. So I have time for two more questions and I'm trying to decide what to ask you. But let me ask you a question on success. What does success mean to Larry?
So for me, it's not monetary. It is happiness and fulfillment and having people around me that I love and I love and I cherish and being in the moment, learning to be in the moment. If I can do those things, that is successful.
Fantastic. And my last question to you, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. As someone who has been there, done that, built a fascinating business, wrote a book, what would your advice be to young individuals who are starting off on their career in the corporate world or as an entrepreneur?
I would say a couple of things. I would say you do not have to compromise. You don't have to settle. Go for whatever that passion is in you, what you think is right. Go for that. When I started the business and I said, we're building it, based on being remote. And we started in 2001, which was a terrible economy. So many people are like, you are crazy. Do not do that. Don't listen to those people, listen to yourself and don't compromise. And then the second one is we have built a company where we're nice to each other. We don't have politics in the organization and we do everything ethically and kindly with all of our clients. And so you can be nice and win. You can be nice and be successful. You don't have to compromise on that.
Amazing. Larry, on that note of you can be nice and win and don't compromise, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me at such length on Centric Consulting and the amazing things you're doing there. Thank you for talking to me about technology, about your book. And I must say, I'm so amazed that you thought of remote working and work from home 18 years before the world was forced into working from home. But thank you again and good luck.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.